Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
All right, John, Jim told us this in the first hour, and I didn't believe him. Kat Nizzou, the kicker that we remember from missing all those field goals in the tie on Thursday night against Arizona a couple years back, quit. He's retired. He quit because he couldn't take the pressure. This is the softest thing I've ever heard of.
Cody Doink retired?
No! Kat Nizzou. What's his name? Chris.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Catanzaro? Yeah.
Chandler Catanzaro. No, but you bring up another failed, spoiled milk kicker there.
Yeah, the Doink Doink.
It's emotional when you miss those kicks, although, it never, I guess, personality-wise affected Blair Walsh, but I thought it was kind of interesting that, here's the replacement that they brought back to replace Jason Myers, and, Myers went to the Pro Bowl. They elected not to pay him, or at least not equal what the Seahawks did, because really, I mean, Jason was basically talking to two teams. It was the Jets and the Seahawks, and he liked it back out here. But then you got his replacement that they brought back, and of course, maybe we get to see why the general manager got fired, because Myers is kicking even better than he was last year. His kicks are longer, more powerful, and now they have basically nobody there to try to go. In fact, they had to go for an AAF kicker after having a Pro Bowler that they were able to luck into last year.
Hey, John, this Antonio Brown helmet thing, we were just kind of talking about that. I mean, my helmet was very important to me. And as somebody pointed out, a texter, it's really not. I mean, they're trying to develop helmets that will lessen concussions or the likelihood of concussions. But basically, your brain is like an unseatbelted passenger in a car, right? So basically, mm-hmm. you're just trying to protect the skull and everything. But, how far is he going to take this? Because it says the arbitrator just denied his grievance.
Well, he did come back today and got word out through different people that he's going to play football this year. It's just now when he's going to show up for the Raiders. And so it could be a matter of just a couple of days. Maybe he's going to take another week or whatever it's going to be. But, he had no chance in this one, because understanding the parameters of this is not the National Football League that's making the judgment. It's the Players Association. And so it's not like they're going to stick up for him and go fight in his behalf, because they're the ones saying, no, we don't want you to go out there with a 10-year-old helmet and risk any kind of damage to your brain. And so it's time to move on to a different helmet. Tom Brady didn't like it. I guess anybody who's been in the league more than 10 years doesn't like it, particularly if they've had the same helmet. But I mean, think about this. How, after all those years of football, how did your helmet look? Particularly now knowing that players are bigger, faster, I don't know if they're stronger, but it's like, I mean, how'd that helmet look after 10 years?
Yeah, well, it's all bashed up and everything, but I mean, they can always fix it and replace the buckles, and they used to refurbish them every year, go through and take the nicks out and stuff like that. But yeah, it just, to me, it just seems like he should be able to just sign a waiver saying, okay, I'm not going to, come back and, if I get hurt or I get a concussion or whatever, I'm not going to complain about it because, I want to wear this helmet. Seems like they should be able to get that
done. Yeah,
but
as strong as they feel about it, as he might feel about it, I think that you can see that the Players Association, they must have some study to go with this, or they wouldn't be doing this because, Eric Winston's a longtime guy that's been in the league, 10 years or more, and so he's going to have the same feeling if he likes his helmet. But I'd have to think this has been accompanied with some kind of a study that says, no, it's too dangerous right now if you're going to have a helmet that old, and particularly knowing, the advancements that everybody has in the new helmets. I mean, here in Seattle, this is kind of like the laboratory for all the new helmets, because this is where so many, and of course you got a lot of the Seahawks wearing them. But in the end, I think that this is one where there's no way you're going to change this, because this is what the players want, and not an individual player who's been in the league 10 years or more.
Hey, John, have you talked to Paxton Lynch?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
I interviewed him last week.
What were your impressions of him? Because I thought that was really something. I mean, he stepped up in a game situation. What we saw was nothing like what we've seen in practice. It was actually quite the opposite. And I'm just wondering what your impression was of him. Why did he it not click for him, and what happened to him in Denver?
Well, I think initially in his first year, maybe his second year too in Denver, he didn't work as hard as he probably needed to. You know, maybe too many video games and not enough game study. And so whether that's fair or not, I think there was the work ethic wasn't there the first year. I think you can see the work ethic is here now. I mean, it took him a little bit of while once he got here in the OTAs and everything else to learn the offense. And it got to the point where they got a little concerned after a couple of days of him picking up the offense. That's why they went out and got Geno Smith. And so now you have the competition. But I think that maybe what we're looking at is he's a gamer. Now you can see on certain type of things where he has to throw on the run. I mean, mechanically, there's some missteps. And you saw at least two passes. I mean, that one pass that was a little side pass, looked like a screen pass. It just, you know, did kind of a Tim Tebow bounce before it reached the running back. You know, that was a little bit scary. But I think you can also see, I mean, he's got a great arm. I mean, he can throw just about every throw. You can see that he can run. I mean, you can see that he's big, he's strong, and all those different things. And there's a good upside to him. Now, the question is, you know, can he somehow catch up in practice to what Geno Smith did? But maybe what we're looking at is he's a gamer. He does better in games than he does in practice.
Hey, Professor, Dak Prescott reportedly turned down $30 million a year. He wants $40 million a year. Do you think where do you think this is going to settle?
No, this has actually been corrected during the course of the day. Somebody came out and reported that, and then that's been re-reported by several outlets that he's not asking for $40 million, which would be totally ridiculous. He's probably asking for about $34 million. And you can see his point on that, although, again, it may not necessarily be valid because, I mean, the Eagles came back and tried to do Carson Wentz a year early just because they know the price next year is going to be probably $37, $38 million. And so they're being proactive in that. And so that set the bar at between 32 and 35, which is what Russell Wilson's deal done is. So now how can they make an accommodation? But no, it's been corrected in several instances that he's not asking for 40. He's probably more asking for 34. So I guess you could say that, you know, they're 4 million apart. At some point, you just have to cut the difference and get something done.
You know, Professor, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say, Dak Prescott, were you going to, you know, just he is vastly underrated. I mean, if you look at his number, last year he was 67% passing completion percentage, 22 touchdowns, not a lot, but only 8 interceptions. And in 16 games his rookie year, he only threw 4. So, I mean, this guy, I feel like Dak Prescott gets sort of overlooked, and everybody always talks about Ezekiel Elliott and that offense. But, man, I just think he's one of those guys, when you look at his numbers, it's surprising to see how successful. I feel like he doesn't get enough of the hype.
Well, he's a career 66% passer, which is good. He's a career 66% winner, which is now what you can see is the thing that he needs. I mean, you know, he is not like Russell Wilson. I mean, their styles are similar, different type of body type, but you know, you can see that he's smart. He doesn't make mistakes, although he does have a tendency at times to hold on to the ball a little bit too much, and he needs to speed that up, the delivery process. But, no, he's a good quarterback, but he's not a top 7 quarterback. He's more of a top 14, top 13 quarterback. I mean, does he deserve over $30 million? Absolutely, because you look at the wins and you look at the upside, you look at his work ethic and everything else. I mean, but he's not the equal of Russell Wilson because Russell's, you know, top 5, top 7, or somewhere in that top group. You know, Dak Prescott, if you go by Mike Sando's kind of tier 1, tier 2 type of thing, he's more of a tier 2 type quarterback, but he's a good one. And I agree. I think that, you know, he doesn't get the acclaim that he should.
Yeah, and you know what? Not a lot of pass attempts either. It's not like Mahomes. Yeah. I mean, I think over his career, it's about 30.
31 pass attempts, yeah. Which is five more than what Russell had last year.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, he's not like Mahomes. I mean, some of those guys, Breeze, Roethlisberger, I mean, they're 35 to 40. He's only thrown it 30 times. Very efficient, much like Russell.
Hey, John.
And really, I mean, if you look at the way that he leads, it's very much like Russell. He's very positive. I mean, he's one that is not going to say anything negative, or he's going to be very positive about things. I mean, he's got a good relationship. I still remember going back to Tony Romo's last year and his first when he started taking over for Tony, that Tony was totally respectful, but the players really respected the way that Dak handled things, because it's not as if Dak went in there with the idea that I'm going to stab Tony Romo in the back and take away his job. I mean, he just was a natural guy as far as being a quarterback and a leader, and the guys went up to him and they played for him. And the only problem that happened was that as the years kind of went on, the speed at the receiver position dropped so dramatically that he just couldn't get guys that could separate. Dez Bryant had the metatarsal injuries that slowed him down. Cole Beasley was a slow slot guy, and so he didn't have that separation, and that made it tough, particularly when he holds on to the ball too much. But again, this is a good quarterback.
John, the Panthers and Bills are going to practice together later this week, and I think it's interesting because Ray Rivera said that they're not going to put up with any fighting. And when you have teams that practice together, that's always a danger because you don't even have – I mean, there's fights anyway in training camp. Do you think they'll be able to limit the fights in the practices?
I think the edict is already there, and you can see there's a good relationship between the two coaches and a good because you remember pretty much most of the bosses there from Buffalo came from Carolina. I mean, the general manager, the head coach, and all that. And Ron is very adamant about that. I mean, Pete Carroll's very adamant about that. That you really you don't want to have the self-inflicted wounds by having fights, or you don't want to get into fights. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's going to be hot and it's going to be nasty as far as that goes. But if you get into a fight, you're in trouble.
Hey, Mike, I was going to ask you about Mike Iupati. John, should we be worried about him? I mean, this is a guy who has struggled a little bit with health, and he's walking around in a boot out there. And what are you hearing as far as, like, number one, his health, but also just how they're going to use him this year?
Well, Pete Carroll yesterday talking about it said that they're just being extra cautious with him. I know when he was walking around today, he didn't have the boot on, but there was a little bit of an extra limp, particularly with about, 45 minutes into practice. You have to be concerned because, both he and DJ Fluker both have had injuries, but Pete Carroll doesn't seem to be too worried about it. He seems to think that, he's going to be there and, maybe he misses another week or so. And again, if he doesn't play in the preseason, that's okay. I mean, he'd like to be able to get a little bit of time, but I mean, nobody's playing in the preseason right now, the way things are going. So, you just want to get him healthy for the start of the season. So that means he wasn't going to play this week in the first game anyways. And so now, the idea would be get him out there for a little bit in game two, but that's probably not going to happen. But no, I think that you worry that he should be okay, the healing process. But again, when you see him limping around a little bit, that's not good.
Okay, I'll ask all of you guys this question. If you had to pick either, you're going to keep either Ethan Posick or Joey Hunt, who would you keep?
Joey Hunt.
Say right now he's probably going to be Ethan Posick, just because he can play guard and he can play center. You'd like to have Joey Hunt, but they still can.
Can Hunt play guard too, John?
What's that?
Yeah, Joey Hunt can play all three. Joey Hunt played tackle.
He can do it, but not. He's not going to fit in very well because you look how small he is. And how small? I mean, that doesn't fit what Mike Solari wants. I mean, he wants big 330. I mean, even Posick, is not the big 330, but he is bigger than Joey Hunt. I mean, Joey Hunt's just a natural bend down center, and I think he's pretty good at it. I mean, it's like you'd love to be able to keep him as a center, but I think right now the versatility of Ethan Posick, and particularly under the circumstance too, because if George Fant is not going to be ready for the start of the regular season, then you need Posick to be, a backup tackle, possibly. And so you have three options with Ethan Posick, where with Joey Hunt, you have one option at center. I know I say that knowing there was, I think, one game where Hunt had to fill in at guard. But again, he doesn't have the big body that you'd really like for what they want to do with the offense. And so, no, I think Posick would have the advantage in that. And, although I did see George today, he did have the boot off. He seemed to be moving pretty good. I know he walked past me and gave a little smile and said, "Hey, that looks pretty good," because that looks so better. And he seemed to be encouraged.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm keeping Joey Hunt. Joey Hunt can play guard. He can play tackle. He can play center. The other thing is, and John, you were there. Brian Schottenheimer, when the offensive coordinator says, I love Joey Hunt. I mean, I don't think he mentioned any other offensive linemen. And he just loves what he can do and what he's about. And I just, John, I've cut him every year. I'm not cutting him. I'm not cutting him this year when I make up my 53-man roster.
It's funny that you mentioned that.
What if Phil Haynes stays on the injured list?
Pup list?
And so, yeah, so if that's the case, then, you know, you have that one extra roster spot. Because you figure they're going to keep 9 or 10 offensive linemen.
Yeah,
they usually do.
They have to.
You mentioned Schottner.
And it'd probably be better to keep both, you know, Posick and Hunt. Because realizing that, you know, are you going to get 16 games out of DJ Fluker? Are you going to get 16 games out of Mike Iupati? You may not.
Yeah, maybe they keep them both. I just thought that was because they're both versatile, and just one's a lot bigger than the other.
Yeah, but little Joey Hunt, he is so valuable. It's funny you mentioned Schottenheimer, saying how much he loves Joey Hunt. Mike Holmgren, one of the only tells you could say, if there was a guy that was possibly either in trouble or about to be cut, Mike would usually refer to him as one of my favorite guys ever.
No way.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite guys ever. It would be,
but
yeah, there would always be the butt coming when he'd say that. He is one of my favorite guys. Hey, coach, what do you think about Rashad Moore, who everybody called Booger? He's one of my favorite guys ever. But we're going to see how that pans out. He ended up getting cut that year.
Yeah.
All right, Professor, let's talk about a Coug. Why don't we hear it? Luke Falk, 9-for-11 with one touchdown pass for the Jets in their first preseason game. But I'm looking at their quarterback depth chart with Darnold, Simeon, Davis Webb, and then Luke Falk. What are his chances there?
Not too good. Now, the debate's going to be, can you keep three? Because I think that they want to have Simeon as the backup quarterback. And so I think it's a matter that you know, he's probably fighting for more a practice squad opportunity than anything else. I don't know, but speaking of Cougars, it's starting to look like Gardner Minshew may have a chance in Jacksonville.
I know you sound surprised by that, John. It's a Mississippi mustache. He can play a little bit.
Some people, I know, when you start to see some writers who cover the team during their depth charts, they actually have him in there making the team.
Nice.
That's good news, John.
How's Nick Foles doing down there? Do we know?
Great. Really good. You know, he looks very accurate. I mean, he's on top of everything, shows good leadership. I mean, so far, he's living up to everything they wanted when they brought him in.
All right. Tom Brady says no one should read anything into the selling of his house. Did you know that's never a sign of any? Should we read anything into the selling of his house, Jim? John?
I don't read much into it. I mean, you know, it's. Maybe he just needs the money. I doubt that. He's so rich right now.
Yeah, he's probably a little light on cash right now, kind of like.
Yeah, wanted to downsize a little bit. But listen, I mean, he wants to play. He wants to play for the Patriots. And, I mean, you know, there's going to be life after the Patriots with Tom Brady being involved. I think, you know, his situation, very similar to John Elway. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Bob Kraft offers him a chance after his football career to maybe buy into the team. So I'm kind of like him. I don't read too much into it. Although, again, you know, he is year to year right now, and that's the way they structured the contract. But if the year goes like I think it will, and they're going to be fighting to get back to the Super Bowl, you know, why is there going to be any kind of separation?
John, percentage chance that C.J. Procise makes the team?
I'd say 4%.
4%.
Because, again, didn't practice again today. He's missed, what, two-thirds of his game since coming here to Seattle. What is it, like he's missed 32 out of 48, something of that nature. And so I cannot see him making the team. And, you know, my read right now is that I don't know if Bo Scarborough is going to make the team, but I think Bo Scarborough has probably moved ahead of C.J. Procise. I mean, you know, say what you want. I know he hurt his hand in the game. I mean, he didn't miss any practice, or he missed one practice and then was back out there. So it was like he's, you know, he shows his toughness. And I'm not saying that CJ's not showing, but if you can't practice, you can't play.
As a little surprise, Bob Condotta, his breakdown, the 53-man roster, John, he had Scarborough making the team. He feels like they're probably going to go with Carson and Penny a little more as the third down backs, and that would lessen the need to keep J.D. McKissick and maybe Travis Homer.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like I tended to think a different way too, because I mean, even though Homer's banged up right now and not practicing, I mean, I love the way that he catches the ball and runs. And then, you know, what about J.D. McKissick? Because again, you know, he looks to be the returner, the versatile guy that can help out at wide receiver. He's so fast. I know he's banged up too. That's why I had to get Xavier Turner out of nowhere to come in with like 1 minute of looking at the offense and being able to have 13 carries and leading the team in rushing in the first preseason game. But I like what I saw at the end of the year Scarborough in practice because he does look encouraging.
Yeah, Xavier Turner, did he get there the day before or was it? Yeah, okay. So he had
day before.
Yeah, so like 24 hours to get ready, and he's the leading rusher in the
team. Awesome
game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's two
and
times
he had 13 carries and ran well.
There's two times a year that happens. It happens in the preseason when you get these kind of scrambles, and then there's times it'll happen at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden you're completely out of players. So you go. I remember 1 year like John Howell, who was a safety that had been with the Seahawks. He hadn't played all year. He was a hunting guide, I think, in Colorado.
Yes, that's right.
And all of a sudden, he was there. He and the bail bondsman, Pete Turner? And I think Pete might have started at cornerback. He had been a bail bondsman in
Dallas. His name was Chico.
Oh, really? It was there.
Bail bondsman.
It's always funny when those sort of things happen, when you get those sort of stories. John, other things that you saw from Thursday night's game that opened your eyes, who do you think really helped themselves? Who do you think hurt themselves?
Well, let's see. I thought that both second-year defensive players, Jacob Martin and Rasheem Green, helped themselves. Certainly, it was funny because we're talking about this today off the air, is that we hadn't really mentioned Gary Jennings, and we couldn't mention Gary Jennings or anything, but I know he had an awesome day today. I think that you look at some of the guys on defense. I mean, Trey Flowers did some good things. Certainly, I think that Ugo Amadi looked to me just a natural slot guy. I like what I saw there. There's no doubt that Marquise Blair helped himself, even though he did get the one penalty. So there's a lot of encouraging things that happened. But again, I think Jacob Martin, I thought really of the pass rusher, I think he did the best.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think also Mingo had a sack, right? Did he in that game? But he also had a couple special team tackles too. So, I think he's
to
gone.
To be honest, I thought the biggest winner of the day though wasn't a player. I thought it was a coach. It was Ken Norton Jr., who I know we interviewed him today, and he wants to be more aggressive. And the fact that he had linebacker blitzes, safety blitzes, he had cornerback blitzes. Oh, and the other guy I forgot to mention too was Austin Calitro.
Yep.
I mean, 99% of the snaps, he had a sack. He did a lot of good things.
Yeah, he played better than anybody, and I think that's going to be a tough one, John. You know,
it is.
You know, with him, maybe they're able to slide Shaquem into the practice squad. You know, if they decide to cut him, but I feel like if they cut Calitro, he's going to get picked up right away.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that because I mean, he just looks so natural out there. I mean, what you wonder about is that when they start crunching the numbers, I mean, could it be possible, because you know that they like Ben Burkervin a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, could Calitro beat out Ben Burkervin?
Yeah, I mean, he's playing better than he is right now. I don't think registered. Ben Burkervin didn't register a tackle, but I sure like the way he moves around the field. I mean,
I think we all do. I think. Let's put it this way. They've got a heck of a lot of linebackers on this team that look pretty good. I mean, that to me is the deepest unit on the team.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We'll catch up with you a little bit later this week.
Okay, sounds good.
If you missed any of the Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast, 710sports.com. There's one player who was playing catch-up today. Seahawks training camp will tell you who that is, plus give away two more tickets for the Mariners. That's next on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, we're going to try a contest. We're going to try and do it. The bar is going to be extremely low here. So I don't want anybody to get mad about how easy the question's going to be. But let's open up the phone lines, 206-421-3776. The first person that gets the question right is going to win a pair of tickets to the August 23rd Mariners game. They're going to host Toronto. Don't forget to come by early. You can stop and see us. We got our live broadcast at Edgar's Cantina from 3 to 6. Tickets and our broadcast are brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. So go ahead and load up the phone lines, 206-421-3776. When training camp opened, I thought that Gary Jennings was going to be the Seahawks' leading rookie receiver this season. I've always thought and believe that while DK Metcalf might pan out down the road and might be one of the more exciting players on this team, that Gary Jennings would be the guy that would emerge fastest. And for 2 weeks and through Thursday's preseason opener, he has been largely silent. It's not a guy you've seen very much from.
Yeah, you know why that is.
Why is that?
It's the fourth round jinx for wide receivers that are drafted by the Seahawks.
I forgot about that.
That's right.
How could you have forgotten about
that? Is
this
the Kansas State kid?
I already told you about it.
Chris Harper.
Harper. What about Alabama kid Norwood? Was he fourth?
Kevin Norwood was also a fourth round pick.
I remember seeing Kevin Norwood and just randomly watching a college game and going, man, that dude's a pro football player.
Chris Durham out of Georgia.
So you pick a wide receiver in Seattle in the fourth round, the odds are against you.
And I think I proclaimed when you said that was one of the craziest things that's ever come out of your mouth. The idea that if you pick the wide receiver in the fourth round, as opposed to the fifth, in the fifth he might be fine, but in the fourth round, look out.
Yeah, that dude, that is the one guy who probably has the most production in college. If you go back and look at, you know, like he appeared in 52 games, he had catches every year, touchdowns. What, I think he was sixth in the nation in touchdowns last year. I think he had 13. Urso had 16, 17 actually, if you count the rushing touchdown. And yeah, he just looked like he's gotten kind of lost in the shuffle right now. But you know what? There's still time. I mean, he had a nice catch today that I think I heard Pete or somebody talking about. And, it's just funny, though, that he hasn't been – it's been Jazz Ferguson. It's been DK Metcalf.
And did you hear what Russell had to say about him today, Gary Jennings? He said he had his best day yet, and he needed it, quite honestly.
He looks great today.
He's got a history with Jennings, too, doesn't he, Russell?
I believe –
Yeah, going back to Virginia.
He coached the kid when it was like 8-9 years ago. He coached the kid in basketball.
Gary Jennings went to the collegiate school, I believe is what it's called. And it's a K-12 prep school that Russell Wilson attended. And Gary Jennings went somewhere else for high school. It was very unusual that Russell stayed at the collegiate school for the entire high school career. And I remember the principal there telling me that.
Oh, yeah, when you went out there to do your story.
Yeah, the principal telling me that his dad said to him, I'm not sending Russell to this school to get him ready for sports. I'm sending him here to get him ready for the rest of life and a career and a true college prep approach. But yeah, Gary Jennings, when he was in grade school, worked with Russell Wilson there.
I want Gary Jennings to make this team, but if he doesn't make this team, I want you to come in the day after and say, you know, Jim, you must be onto something with that fourth round wide receiver jinx thing.
You're not going to come up with something better than that for me to say. I'm willing to say if that turns out to be right, I'm willing to read whatever you write for me.
And I want you to say that John Schneider should never draft a wide receiver in the fourth round again. Can you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, I would say that if I'm willing to concede that I'll read whatever you write, you should come up with something more creative. Like, you remember when I made you read how much you liked Jimmy Lake?
Well, yeah.
After the Apple Cup?
And I really don't like him at all. Zero.
That was
negative.
That was pretty fun to talk about it. The coaching acumen that Jimmy Lake had.
Yeah.
I believe before you got to that point, you're like, no, I don't like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like the tweet by Jimmy Lake when he's driving his boat to work. Yeah.
Heck yeah. Gary Jennings looked really good today. And that's the list of and the competition at wide receiver, because Jerron Brown, and I know we had talked about where he figures in. Jerron Brown's on this team. He did not play Thursday night, and I think that speaks to how much they expect him to play this season. His status is not in doubt. You've got three rookies that were drafted in Gary Jennings, DK Metcalf, and John Ursua. You've got Jazz Ferguson. You've got David Moore. Wide receiver is one of the most competitive spots on this roster. Malik Turner, who didn't get a lot of opportunities in the game and didn't have a pass thrown to him, he's someone whose name you need to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, he caught some passes last year, actually, from Russell. I know Russell likes him, so that's always good news. You know, I was down on the field for halftime, and John Ursua caught a pass right before the half, and he's got the number 15 jersey on, like Doug Baldwin's rookie year, as Aaron Levine pointed out to me, and he kind of looked like Doug. He ran a really nice route, had a nice catch, and zipped up. I mean, that guy, like I said, 16 touchdowns last year, led the nation. And so, yeah, he had a bunch of games with over 100 yards. I mean, so he's another one. Yeah, that I don't think we've seen everything that we're going to see there. I mean, the Jazz Ferguson thing, you hope he's able to do that again, but he would definitely, if he made the team, would definitely be a huge underdog because all the hype coming around DK Metcalf. You know, all that hype, I think you kind of pump the brakes a little bit with Jazz Ferguson as well. You know, it's one game. We'll see if he can do it again.
Yeah, boy, it's just everybody knows it's loaded there. But Urso, I think, has a great chance. I mean, you mentioned that catch that he had looking like Doug Baldwin, but Seahawks making a third-day trade to get him and get that pick. And so I think he's got a good shot at it.
All right, you ready for our quiz?
I'm ready.
Our contest. I said that the bar is going to be fairly low. We're going to start out with Bobby in Tacoma. Bobby, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty well. You'd like these two tickets to the August 23rd game?
I would love the tickets.
If you get them, are you going to come by and say hi to us when we're on the air?
Heck yeah.
Okay. All right, here's the question. What number did Edgar Martinez wear?
Oh, my gosh, guys.
Come on.
I told you it was going to be easy. Bobby?
Wait a minute. Where'd Bobby go?
Art in Yakima. Art, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well. Can you answer that? Are you going to come all the way over here from Yakima for the Mariners game on the 23rd?
You know what? Absolutely. Number 11.
Number 11. Yeah. All right.
Are you a minors or majors guy?
I'm a majors kind of guy.
Majors. That a boy. Me too.
I am. But I grew up on minors, though. There's nothing wrong with minors.
Did you graduate to majors? Is that how it works? You go from minors to majors?
I did. Somebody accidentally introduced me to them, and they've got a lot of beer-battered stuff going on there, and I just can't help myself.
What in the world are you guys talking about?
Hamburger joints.
Okay.
There's a majors and there's a minors. Art, are you going to come by and see us when you come out on the 23rd?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much. Congratulations. Hold on, and they'll get your information. I said it was a pretty low bar. Do you think the guy?
What happened to Bobby? He missed a lay-in there.
Well, it was Chandler Catanzaro. He quit on us.
I know.
Just
have
retired.
We ever had anybody hang up? I think he hung up in shame.
Do you think it was shame, or he maybe got cut off? Because his reaction at first, I couldn't tell whether he thought my question was really stupid and he couldn't believe how easy it was.
We need Bobby to call back. Bobby, call us back.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, baseball jersey numbers, it's not like a slam dunk.
No.
Not like football. Like, what's Bart Colin's number?
Oh, I don't know.
43.
You think so?
I don't know.
Yeah. How about A-Rod when he was playing?
A-Rod was 3, right?
A-Rod was
number 3.
And I believe Jeter was 2. I believe that's correct.
Yeah, I remember Jeter was 2.
Yeah. Griffey's 24.
What number's
Griffey's
Felix?
24.
34. Felix 34.
34, yeah.
It's Danny.
It doesn't pop like right into your mind.
Yeah. It's Danny Davenport. Gary Carter wore number 8. It's my favorite number.
That's your hero.
We're going to sweep the dial. That's coming up next. The Happy Hour is brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The 2-2. Swinging a high fly ball, deep right field, this is going to go. Rio Ruiz hits a walk-off home run out of the flag court, and the Orioles win 8-7. Rio Ruiz pumps his chest as he rounds third, high-fives Jose Flores, flips the batting helmet, and absolutely lunges into a dog pile at home plate.
This was the biggest upset in baseball history, apparently, according to some different folks. The Orioles beating an Astros team that's the World Series favorite and starting Justin Verlander.
Wow. Yeah, they came back in the ninth inning with 3 runs.
This happens all the time, right? Like, how could you have the biggest upset in baseball? It's a regular season baseball game.
Yeah.
Bad teams beat good teams all the time.
They were minus 550.
Yeah.
Never seen that number. The game before that, they beat the Orioles 23-2.
I think they got all their runs out of the way. If only they could bank runs.
I know. Well, they lost 8-7, so they got a fair amount the next day. But
they could have used them, couldn't they?
Yeah.
They could have banked 20 of them and won the night before.
That would have been a little risky. I would have said bank 10. That would have been solid strategy. I think baseball would be better if you could bank runs. Keep scoring and have them count toward the future.
Be interesting.
I think it is definitely the Rich Paul rule. You know, it couldn't be more blatant. In saying that, just name it the Rich Paul rule. Like, why are we subtweeting? Why are we trying to hide and act like this isn't what it is? Now, what should be understood is that this does not affect Rich Paul. Not one bit. But the goal isn't to affect Rich Paul, because I think they now understand that they don't stand a chance to do that. Let's stop the next Rich Paul. Let's stop the next guy who may decide at 18, I want to work for the Golden State Warriors, and possibly by 30, I may just be the GM.
That is Agent Rich Paul referring to himself in the third person repeatedly.
That's Draymond Green.
Oh, it was Draymond?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
Okay.
Because, man, I was like, wow, he's really something then.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Rich Paul is Draymond Green's agent. The rule he's referring to, the NCAA had passed a more lenient rule regarding reentry to college, where a player now, if he declares for the draft, he can return to college provided he doesn't hire an agent. Now he's going to be allowed to hire an agent and still return to school, provided the agent meets certain criteria. And one of those was that the agent have a college degree. And that's lame for a number of reasons. There's lots of people who, Bill Gates didn't graduate college. I don't know if Paul Allen did. Paul Allen?
I don't think Paul Allen graduated from Washington State. Didn't they get rid of this rule today, too?
They did.
The bachelor's degree.
Which
you don't
just
need
shows
that.
You how stupid the NCAA is. I assume when a company that big trots something out there, they've kind of done all the research of like what people are going to say and like how they're going to respond to it. And they're like, well, we're ready to deal with the blowback from this. Nope, the NCAA just puts something out there, has everybody scream and yell about it. They're like, fine, we'll change it. People don't seem to like it. There's no organization as incompetent as the NCAA in sports.
No, I think we were all unanimous on that one last week when we talked about it, like how stupid it was that you needed to, an agent had to have a bachelor's degree. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else. Groz, radio guy, he went right into radio right away. And so, yeah, I mean, that seems kind of silly. You're not really hiring the agent, right?
No.
I mean, you're signing an agreement with him. Because he gets paid based on your salary.
And he's going to advise you. And what it's saying, which is smart, is that in college baseball, they have this exact rule. You can hire an advisor. You can sign with an advisor and still retain your eligibility to go to college, just provided you don't choose to sign the pro contract.
Yeah. And to me, that was a stupid reason to not. You know, I think it's great for these kids. You know, you get an indication like, oh, maybe I should wait another year. Maybe another year of college is good for me. So, yeah, it shouldn't be. You should be able to go back on it no matter what happens.
35, Peterman will work out of the gun.
And again, this is what he could do.
It gets a nice block upfield from Marcel. Rippling down inside the 10-yard line, first and goal, Raiders.
Hey, Peterman.
Hey, Peterman.
I like that.
We've got look a Peterman sighting.
Look at Peterman go.
The Peterman. He can wheel. He can scoot.
How many interceptions?
How's he still in the league?
How many interceptions did he throw in a half of football?
Was it five?
It was five.
Five against the Chargers.
I was going to say that, but I was like, no, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, usually you get pulled after... Yeah, three.
It was such an unbelievable. They benched Tyrod Taylor to play him. Tyrod Taylor's a totally competent NFL quarterback.
He almost beat the Seahawks here that one time.
I still
that
don't
Monday
get
night game.
Tyrod Taylor thing.
I don't either.
Well, why does he not have a job? Remember in Hard Knocks last year?
Yes.
He was an ultimate pro.
Yes.
And I remember the coach, it was Hugh Jackson, went up to Mayfield, and he's like, you see him, he's over there getting here early. I mean, Tyrod Taylor is just he's a pro. He had a great game against the Seahawks on that Monday night game.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. They were knocking on the door there at the end. They were in the red zone.
Yeah, that one's a hard one to figure out, but looks like Peterman's got some legs.
He's got...
Hey, Peterman! Get your guy down on
I'm looking at his stats. 3 touchdown passes in his career, 12 interceptions. Mm-hmm. And he's still in the league.
He
threw 7 interceptions, and 3 of them were returned for pick 6 last year.
His quarterback rating to opponents was off the charts. Like if you evaluated as the intended receivers for the opposing team, I think the Chargers had a bunch of those picks. Yeah, but anyway, it's fun to say.
Hey, Peterman!
Instead,
that's really the only reason we had that.
Yeah, I like the idea that Gruden's trying to rehabilitate him. Like, I feel there's a little bit of ego with Gruden. He's like, I'm going to take this guy that everybody thinks is the worst quarterback ever, and I'm going to show you that I can actually make him a passable NFL quarterback.
We got episode 2 tonight, Hard Knocks.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What, are they going to get into Antonio Brown's
I like the
feet?
Guy from, is it Alabama? Is it Jonathan Abrams in the first episode? He was funny.
That's the one that Luke Wilson told, wait until the pads get on.
Rook. Called him Rook.
Rook. It is Danny David Moore. Jazz Ferguson. People have already been texting. When he makes a good catch, do you talk about jazz hands?
I made that joke on Seahawks.com. Paul Moyer did not get it at all.
Did he not get
and
it?
His
or
wife's
didn't
a dancer.
Like it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, he's got jazz hands.
And he wasn't laughing.
Show me jazz
How
hands,
about you?
Jim.
How about you, Jim?
I've heard the term, but I'm not exactly sure where it originated.
Jazz
yeah,
hands.
You like the theater and musicals and
yeah,
whatnot.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's where it originated.
Village Theater there.
Jazz hands.
Well, yeah, I like going there.
Triple threats, right? Because they can dance, they can act, and they can do something else.
That's correct.
Sing. And sing.
Sing.
All three.
Standing. I can't believe you sit through those.
I can't believe you haven't been to the Village Theater. You live up on the plateau. You just come down the hill and you go.
I
you
don't
go to
like
the bistro
musicals.
Right next door.
When people burst into song randomly, it just makes me uncomfortable.
I assume that that's what happens in the locker room, that you guys just randomly.
Yes. Yeah, they had all the guys out there at the House of Ill Repute, and they were football players, and then they all started dancing.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, this is terrible.
It's Danny David Moore. We've got Jazz Ferguson. He joins us next.